Hi, and welcome to the Entrepreneur Organization Business Podcast. I am your host, Lynn Panetti. My guest today is Otto Dargan, the founder of Home Loan Experts, an online mortgage broking business. Now, he has over 400 people in his team, mostly from Nepal, and now provides outsourcing to Australian mortgage brokers. In this episode, Otto is going to share his experience with outsourcing and offshoring. Challenges of building the team, working in another country, what works and what doesn't, and mastering cultural differences. Please join me in welcoming Otto. Welcome to the show, Otto. So good to have you back.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Actually, I say back meaning you have been on my channel, on my own YouTube channel, but not on the EO podcast. So apologies for that. But this is the first time you're on this EO podcast on YouTube. And yes, I want you to introduce yourself so that all the other EOers get to know you as well as everyone else in the world.
Sure. So I'm Otto Dargan and I'm the founder of Home Loan Experts, which is an Australian mortgage broking business. But what's a bit unusual about us is firstly, we operate mostly online. And secondly, that most of our team is actually in Nepal. So I think we're one of the few businesses that offshores to Nepal, and it's given me quite a unique perspective on business and life and on working across different cultures. We also have outsourcing for other mortgage brokers, so our competitors are our customers, and we have a tech division as well.
Amazing. So I too run a business that's around outsourcing, working with overseas. And, you know, it wasn't all rosy at the beginning. You know, I got ripped off and, you know, I didn't know who I was outsourcing to. And, you know, over time I became better than others and they kind of had a business around that. And so I guess I would love to hear how, you know, even your background story, how did you choose Nepal in the first place? Why did you go overseas instead of like local?
Yeah, so I consistently saw that our industry in Australia, it's really hard to hire good staff. And so then we were looking at all sorts of different options. And initially we tried outsourcing to the Philippines and we tried to India as well. I think there's nothing wrong with those countries, but it didn't work for us. And the reason it didn't work is because I didn't understand outsourcing and offshoring. And I know now that it's a skill to be developed. It's not something that is the same as managing staff in Australia. But how we got into Nepal, so it was attempt number three. And what it was is a friend of mine came to me and we're at the pub and he said, Otto, I've got this crazy idea and I want you to hear me out. And I don't say no right away. And I said, okay, well, what is it? And he says, I want to go to Everest Base Camp and I want you to come with me. And I said, yeah, I'm in. Let's do it. And he said, you don't know when, you don't know the cost, you don't know how long it'll take, you don't know how hard it's going to be. And I go, nope, don't know any of that. Still in. Let's do it. It sounds like an adventure. And so that's how I found myself in Nepal. And I really knew nothing about Nepal. I kind of knew where it was. It was above India somewhere in the mountains. But I had a lot of misconceptions. I thought everyone was Sherpas. There's 6 feet of snow everywhere and there's yaks wandering around. And trust me, it's quite different to that. So when I was in Kathmandu, then one of our staff in Sydney, he said, hey, I've got a mate. He lives in Kathmandu and he can show you around. And so I met up with this friend of his. And this guy was ridiculously smart. He seemed to know everything about the global economy and finance and, you know, the global financial crisis just happened. He understood everything that had happened a lot more than most people in my industry in Australia. And so I said, well, what are you doing for work? And he says, well, I'm working in tech. And I go, but you've got an MBA. What are you doing working in tech? And he said that was the opportunity that had presented itself. I said, well, how about you come and work for me? And so it was an impulse hire. There was no research, no plan, no strategy. But it's not to say that there was no thought put into it. Like, I'm a strong believer in that once you're experienced in business, then your intuition is a form of logic, right? Mm-hmm. It's telling you there's something there. And my intuition said there's something there. And yeah. I'm a strong believer in, you know, trying things out. Like you do a small experiment, like hiring a few people. And if it works, then you expand. And if it doesn't, then you just stop hiring.
So how many years ago was that?
Oh, that was 11 years ago now.
Okay, yeah. And but you just happened to found someone so amazing and, you know, everything was aligned. What was it like in reality when you started hiring other people? You know, now that you're like, yeah, the great case study, I'm going to go down this path and hire more Nepalese. What really happened?
Yeah, I think that we had a lot of teething issues. And what that comes from is that we were trying to apply Australian logic to Nepal. And it's a different world and it works in a totally different way. And so you just can't do that. And we understand that now, but we didn't back then. So we had a lot of challenges around that. But I think what probably got us through was that because that first person we hired was so good and was quite well connected, they really got great results for us. And so that was a key lesson for me, is going offshore. If I was to do it again, I would make sure the first person I hired was amazing.
So is this person still around? And was that person responsible for hiring a majority of your initial, you know, Nepalese staff, or how did it work?
They were responsible for hiring the initial staff. They're no longer with us. They've started their own business and they've done super well. Mm. And I'm really happy to see that. But since then, we've evolved so many times now. It's kind of ironic in that I started my own business partly because I didn't like big corporations, and we've sort of become one.
Mm. And so I also get to hear from you because we're in like a little outsourcing informal forum. And what's really interesting is the fact that when it comes to Nepalese, you have to train them from scratch. Like, they basically have no knowledge in the mortgage industry and you have to spend so many months training, versus with my business in my industry, I pretty much hire experienced marketers, plug them into the job and off they go. And so I would love to hear some of that challenges. It's like, why are you willing to do all that? Like, what's the benefit? What's the gain from putting yourself through so much challenges?
Yeah. So I guess that's a really important lesson around outsourcing, is that you've got to make sure that the market that you're hiring in has the talent pool that you need. For us, it is a challenge, but I think even if, because we are a specialist mortgage broker, we handle a lot of quite difficult loan scenarios. So I think no matter where we went, we need to have really good training program. So for us, what it's about is hiring great people and then investing in them in training. The weakness of that model is that if people only stay a short period of time, then it's not profitable. So we spend a lot of time identifying what predicts hiring success, what will cause a staff member to stay, you know, at least 3 years. That's a minimum.
Okay. And so what are those, you know, examples of what you do that that allows you to know whether they're going to stay long or not?
Yeah. So we used a data analyst, and we looked at records of everyone we hired in the last 8 years or so in Nepal. And so then we just identified what correlates with someone staying a long time and performing well. And there's so many different things. And I think the key point is that it's going to be different for every country.
Mm.
For Nepal, the challenge is a lot of people will move overseas to study. And so then we need to identify people that are not going to study overseas. And so that's the key thing for us.
Mm. And I guess that even though it's a disadvantage in that you have to train, what it's really good that I can see is that you've got a niche that not many people can kind of copy as well, because it's so hard to actually get these talent and train them. Would you say that?
Yeah, we don't really have any significant competition in Nepal. There's now been some mortgage brokers from Australia that have started offices in Nepal as well, but they don't have, you know, 11 years of experience operating in Nepal. So they've got to go through so many hard lessons. So I think that we pretty much in one sense have a small monopoly there in terms of our marketing.
Okay. So what are some of the benefits that you found in working with people like in Nepal? Like what are the culture differences that are value adding that are, you know, different to what you could get in places like Australia?
So we recently compared cultures and we found that they were the exact opposite to Australia on every bit of ideology when it comes to work. So like they're collective, we're individual, you know, they are hierarchical, we're flat, right? All Australians want to be the same. So there's many different differences there. So the key lesson for us was identifying what are the strengths and weaknesses of each country. So it's kind of hard being an Australian to identify what are Australians good at and what are we bad at, because to us, it's just normal, you know, and it's the same for people in other countries, right? So what we find is that Australians are really good at productive disagreement, so challenging each other, innovation, risk-taking and things like that, whereas generally in Asia, and it does vary through Asia, but from a workplace ideology, there's quite a lot of similarities. They tend to be very good at doing the task and following instructions, but they're less good at challenging the way things are done and trying to improve the way things are done. There are exceptions, of course, and, you know, people, so many things influence this, like emotional maturity. You know, if someone in Australia has low emotional maturity, they're not going to productively disagree. And if someone overseas has high emotional maturity, they can do it quite well. So we find that the best model for us is to have an expert in Australia and then backed up by a team in Nepal. And that transfers the knowledge from the Australian, but it enables that Australian to do a lot more work. And it also means that there's oversight of the process and what's happening.
Yeah, totally. That's why I love the combination of, you know, Australian staff who are, you know, you want them to focus on managerial kind of work and strategy, and then combine it with the, you know, the overseas team who is willing and happy to continue to just implement the way it is. And instead of trying to change each other, I mean, yes, you can kind of help them improve a little bit, like, hey, speak up a bit more, or hey, you know, you follow rules a bit more. But I think it's like to kind of change them completely is almost impossible, right?
Yeah, that's right. We can't move too far from what our culture is. So I think what's important is to understand each other's culture and then to adapt to each other's culture. So for my personal life, I want to take the best of Nepalese and Australian culture. And I see that our Nepalese staff that have moved to Australia have done the same thing. And you can see through most of Asia that collective culture means that they spend a lot of time on relationships. They're really welcoming and really kind people compared to Australians, which that they would perceive us as quite rude and abrupt and direct, right?
Oh, no, it doesn't sound that good.
Well, for us, it's normal, right?
Yeah. So the other thing is you've got such a big company right now with so many staff. I mean, what are the numbers now in terms of your internal team versus the staff that you hire for others?
Yeah, so we've got 400 staff in Nepal and 30 in Australia. And our team in Nepal, about 70 to 100 of them work for other mortgage brokers. And we've noticed as we've gone on the journey of scaling is that there's been several stages where we get stuck or where we plateau. And the lesson that I've had each of those times is that there's some kind of lesson to learn. And until we learn that lesson and adapt, then we stay stuck. And it's kind of like each level of scale. So like when you're, you know, 5 to 10 staff versus 50 staff versus, you know, 400 staff, it's like playing a different sport. So if you're playing basketball rules, but you're playing a game of baseball, then you're going to lose, right? And so it's about identifying the new rules of the game, the new competencies to develop, and the new experts you need in your team to help move in that direction.
So interestingly, you've got about 30 managers to like 400. Would you say then the ratio of needing like a manager, like a local person is 1 to 10 with someone overseas or?
Interestingly, I like the 30 staff in Australia, probably about half of them are Nepalese. The ratio is even lower, but I would say as a rough guide, 1 to 10 or 1 to 5 is probably a good rule, and it depends on your offshore team, because the productive disagreement is something that's really important for business, because if you don't have people speaking up about problems or disagreeing, like if you make a decision and it's crazy, but everyone stays quiet, then it's very easy for a company, like everyone, to be harmonious, but to walk off a cliff, right? Mm-hmm. And so you need someone to say, hey, there's a problem. And it doesn't necessarily have to be someone onshore. It's about getting that ratio of people with that mindset to people that don't have that mindset.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was going to ask you. So these are the Nepalese people that you've trained them up and know that they've got the qualities of someone onshore, right? And so it didn't mean that you needed to hire all Australians or anything.
Yeah, that's right. And I think for us, you know, one of the challenges that we face at the moment is that we probably need an Australian full-time in Nepal, and that's something we don't have. And because it just gives, like what I've seen is that the Nepalese staff coming to Australia has been really positive for our Australian culture. And I think that the reverse would also be very positive as well.
Yeah. So without a manager full-time there, how do you juggle your time and making sure that someone's there, you know, and how often are they there? Is that yourself that needs to be there?
So because my girlfriend has a job in Australia, I will not be moving to Nepal. but I do a lot of short trips to Nepal. But we need all of our managers too, because what we find, and I think this is very important for an offshore team, because most Australian business is offshore to somewhere in Asia. And Asian culture is about relationships, and you can't build a strong relationship over Zoom or phone calls. You have to go meet face-to-face. And so we want all of our managers to visit Nepal on a regular basis. We find that very beneficial. We find it helps a lot with open communication and just with seeing what's happening.
Yeah, I too try to go there at least once a year. I don't go as often, probably because of small kids. And then COVID just hit in the last 3 years, yeah. So I've been out there. But yeah, I guess if you were to just summarize as we're ending towards the end of this podcast is, you know, if you're looking back, what would be some things that you would have changed or things that you would have done differently if you started again with working with offshore team?
Yeah, probably I would have learned the culture earlier. I think I had a lot of assumptions, and we all project, right? And I didn't realize just how different everything was. Like the surface things were different, but the way people think was quite different. So I would have learned that earlier.
Yeah, yeah. And what would you say to someone who's got like, you know, a small, let's say 10 people team versus hundreds, and you know, what should we expect as we scale? And I know not if you mentioned it's like a different game, but like, what would be kind of the key kind of milestone challenges or changes that did you see? You know, because for myself, I'm kind of like under 100 people mark. Not that I have them internally, but there's 60 or 70 offshore people that works with clients. But yeah, something that I would want to know, what should I expect as I grow and scale?
Yeah, so for me, around 10 staff, the big challenge was frontline management and leadership skills. So I was a really good mortgage broker, but I didn't know how to manage and I wasn't a great leader. And so that was a big challenge for me. And once I learned those skills, then we got past that plateau. And then kind of around 50 to 100 staff, the challenge was visibility. It's hard to see what's happening. And so then it was about, you know, developing systems for monitoring, proper performance reviews, 360 reviews. So all the structure and systems that are needed for a larger business. Mm-hmm. And now that we're around 400 odd staff, I think it's more about governance. So it's about then, you know, things like setting up an advisory board, making sure that all the senior executives are really high performance, make sure that there's strong alignment and great reporting all the way through the organization, because it gets even harder to see what's going on. Yeah.
My God, it's kind of exciting in business, but it's overwhelming at the same time. Like when I look at your journey, I'm like, I don't know if I want to get to that big of size. So I guess what would, what's your aspiration? Are you hoping to continue to keep growing in numbers, or are you happy with kind of like stability as long as you're happy in business and it's kind of growing steadily?
Yeah, for me, I want effective growth. So if growth comes at the cost of, if everything just becomes messy, then I don't want to do it. So I'm happy to stay the same size, but ideally I want to grow in a slow and sustainable way. And I see that doing that means we've just got to make sure that we've got the systems and the lessons learned for the next level of scale before we get there. Otherwise, it's a house of cards.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That's my approach as well. Like I'd rather peace and happiness over kind of the hustle life and the big numbers. So as we wrap up, I usually like to ask my guests, this question. So this question is, what would you like the world to remember you for?
Yeah, so my philosophy is the world should be a better place because I was here. And so what I want the world to remember me for is for creating opportunities for people who wouldn't otherwise have done it. And so, for example, our team in Nepal, I want to give them great opportunities. And also, I want to help people to buy a house who've been locked out of the housing market. And I think if I can do that at scale, then I have a lot of satisfaction in my life.
Ah, that's so beautiful. Thank you so much, Otto. It's such a privilege to get to speak to you so often in our other forum chats as well as, all the EO events. But thank you again for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you.